It's time for the Drive's Top 4 at 4.
Welcome back. Hour number 2 of the Drive underway here on Fan Run Radio. It's time for your Top 4 at 4. Brought to you this afternoon by our friends at Malone and Costa Dentistry at Knoxville Smiles. Here's Marcus Young.
Thank you, Russell. At number 1, after the defeat of the Florida Gators, Tennessee has moved from 11th to number 8 on the AP poll. Kentucky moves up to 7th by 1. You also have Georgia and Alabama still at 1 and 2. Your top 5 stay the same. Other big changes. Texas A&M, after their defeat over Arkansas, moves up 6 spots to 17th, while Arkansas drops 10 from 10th to 20th.
Did you guys see the SEC shorts thing, those little weekly videos those guys do?
Huh.
This week's was really good. I know we look at it from a biased perspective, but you know what I'm talking about, right?
I think I do, yeah. Where they're wearing the Tennessee gear.
Of every fan base. And this week's was, they're in a boardroom, and we call this meeting of SEC teams in the top 10 to action. And it's the Georgia guys there, the Alabama guys there, the Kentucky guys there, and then the Arkansas guys leaving, and the Kentucky guy says to him, "Hey man, I'll be joining you shortly." And they're like, "All right, let's get down to it." Then all of a sudden you hear a helicopter coming in, and they're like, "Wait a minute, what's that?" And the facial expressions are classic. They're just like, "Oh no."
I need to watch it.
Guy walks in, he does the Vince McMahon walk into the room. He's like, "Yeah, I'm back."
I do have a very quick question. Do you think Kansas deserves to be in the top 25?
Probably the top 25. Now, I see everybody's, Danny Cannell has interjected himself into this conversation with just a lunatic tweet, but
I do agree with that.
I mean, was he smoking weed when he was? I'm not a grass expert.
I don't know. But yeah, I mean, they probably deserve to be ranked, right? They're 4-0, wins over a couple.
Yeah, I have no problem with that part of his argument. Just the whole, they've got a better resume than Tennessee.
Yeah, that's stupid.
I thought that was ridiculous. At number 2, Georgia Tech has fired their athletic director, Todd Stansberry, along with the football coach, Jeff Collins.
Mm.
Collins, with his 4th season as the coach, have lost 9 straight games to FBS opponents dating back to last season, and are coming off a 27-10 loss to UCF.
Well, I mean, he was not good. He was not good there. And you knew it was going to take a while when they fired Paul Johnson. You're going from being the triple option team to a more traditional college football team. And it just never worked out. I mean, this is year 4 for him?
And he had 3 years left on his contract.
Well, they thought they were going to can him last year, and the AD was loyal, brought him back, and they still suck.
And now they're both gone.
Is that a job that you can win at?
Yeah, I think it's tough. They've got, they've got academic. They've got a different set of academic requirements at Georgia Tech.
At number 3, the NFL has decided to get rid of the actual football game, and said they will be doing changes to the skill events.
You're leaving out that key part.
Yeah, sorry. Well,
they're still playing NFL football, ladies and gentlemen.
Are they though? Because I've seen some of the games, and I question whether they're actual games. What? We had a game that ended 11-10 last night. Come on,
NFL's great, man. The only game I saw yesterday was the Titans game, and this morning I was looking through the scores and stuff, and they're all 2- and 3-point games. All of them.
It's insane.
The sport is crazy.
But yes, the NFL is getting rid of the Pro Bowl, and instead we'll be focusing on, similar to what other leagues have done, more of a skills competition, and there will be a flag football game, which will be known as the Pro Bowl Games. Are you happy with this decision?
I mean, I don't care. I'm not a big Pro Bowl guy. It's never been something I've watched. Obviously, the players don't care about it. The game itself has become kind of a mockery. Do we really?
Well, because most of those guys don't take it seriously. Then you'll have the wild card, like a James Harrison, who is on 11 anytime he gets on a field, whether it's a charity game or the Super Bowl.
I mean, gives, Do we really need a flag game, though?
No, not really. I'm sure the teams, I mean, you know, I realize there's not contact in flag football, but you can still get hurt.
Make it worth their while. Have some sort of prize at the end of this whole thing. And finally, at number four, NASCAR legend Jimmy Johnson has announced retirement from full-time racing.
Really?
He doesn't plan on giving up racing altogether, but his full-time career is over.
He's got to be in his early 40s.
Yeah, 47. He retired from NASCAR after the 2020 season for open-wheel racing. He spent the last 2 years racing for Chip Ganassi Racing at IndyCar, where he had a little success. But he has...
The deal was he's not very good on, you know, the road courses because all his experience in NASCAR is in ovals, and he did better in the ovals than IndyCar. The problem with that is it's insanely dangerous IndyCar racing on ovals. I mean, those guys are going like 230 miles an hour.
So it sounds like he will still do some kind of bucket list type races, but as a full time racer, he is
finished.
Do the
Tony Stewart thing, kind of.
Yeah.
I doubt he'll. I'd be willing to bet we aren't going to see him at Indy again. He crashed at Indy this year, and it was pretty scary.
All right, thank you, Marcus. That is the Top 4 at 4. It's brought to you by Malone and Costa Dentistry at Knoxville Smiles, and that's where I go for all my dental needs. They do a great job here in Knoxville. Dr. Steve Malone has been practicing here in East Tennessee for 25 years now. His partner, Dr. Michael Costa, and his wife, Bree, are newer to the game. Mike's been doing it for a while over there now, but they've just got a great local practice here, and you see all these pop-up dental places where, like, the guy comes in for 2 days out of the month, and just, you're just, like, part of an assembly line. That's not what you want your dentist. You want a dentist who knows you and your specific needs, and that's what you get at Malone and Costa Dentistry at Knoxville Smiles. You can schedule an appointment online at KnoxvilleSmiles.com, or you can call them at 865-539-1776, and you let them know I sent you. And the good folks here at Fan Run Radio, their advertising dollars are well spent and working hard for them. We greatly appreciate that because we love us some Malone and Costa Dentistry at Knoxville Smiles. Back to it. The Drive continues. Overreaction Monday edition of the show. Christopher Gabriel is coming up here in about 12 minutes. So if you want to talk, now is a great time to jump in. Do it now. 865-546-8200. Your number to get on the show, 546-8200. So watching Adrian Martinez over the weekend has kind of got me to thinking. Because Adrian Martinez, for folks who don't remember, is a five-star quarterback recruit who was committed to Tennessee at the end of the Butch Jones tenure. And then Butch gets fired, and he
makes a horrendous mistake and flipped to Nebraska. Right?
But I don't think Pruitt really recruited him. I think it's one of those deals where I'm going to bring my own guy and whatever. And so, yeah, he goes to Nebraska, which at the time thought, it's a mistake in hindsight, but at the time they've got the hot young thing. It's Scott Frost, who had just gone 12-0 at UCF, and now he's going to the Big Ten. And like it seemed like a good decision at the time, but it just didn't work out. And everybody's thinking he's a Garantano-like bust. And now he's at Kansas State, where this guy, Chris, is it Kleiman or Kleeman? The dude from
Kleiman.
North Dakota State is there, and he's got them playing great football. And so I wonder some of these guys, and I think about Garantano too, as culture and coaching are so huge. Jared Garantano threw a touchdown pass in Nissan Stadium in a Cardinals-Titans game. In a preseason game. And yeah, he didn't make the roster, but did any of us when he was here dream that he would even
play in
sniff
a preseason
a practice
game?
Squad? Like, yeah, I mean, that's crazy to me.
No, huh?
But it just makes me wonder if he had gone somewhere with a good coach and a good culture in place, how much better would he have been? And here's the other thing that it makes me think about is our guy. Hendo Sanko, who was thoroughly pedestrian at Virginia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
And now he comes here, and he's just killing it.
He's one of the front runners for the Heisman Trophy.
He's lighting it up. if Hendo Sanko had transferred to Nebraska instead of here, like, what do you think that would look like?
Probably not good for him.
So
what would Josh Heupel have done with all the weapons we had in 15 and 16?
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's interesting, and it makes me think when we're evaluating these quarterbacks and guys that make in the NFL, guys that know, oh, that guy was a five-star coming out of high school, never made it as a bust. And, okay, was he really a bust, or was he just never really given an opportunity to succeed? And then these guys who are balling out at the college level, and you think, okay, well, I wonder what that guy's going to do in the pro level. And then he gets to the pros, and he's not as good, and it kind of makes you think, okay, is he not as good as we thought, or was his coaching in college so good that it made it look better than he actually is? And I'll be interested to see how Hendon Hooker looks at the next level. He's certainly going to get his opportunities, but it makes me think – this. By the way, this take is in no way taking a shot at Hendon Hooker. I'm glad he's here. He is – I said it Saturday night on Voluntary Action. He's the best quarterback we've had since Casey Clawson, and we've had some good ones since then. But
I got some pushback on that from some people.
Well, that's fine. There's certainly a good argument to be made there. But my point is not to take a shot at Hendon at all. My point is I think this Heupel guy – I mean, I think he's pretty good.
Oh, you think so?
I think he knows what he. I think he knows what he's doing. And listen, I'm not coach worshiping here. We've been down this road before. Not making that mistake again. That's why I'm not. Yeah, I think so. I'm not declaring anything here. He's got to get a defense, man. You got to play defense at some point. I don't know. Maybe you don't. Maybe just go out there and score 70 points a game. And you don't have to play any defense. But I think that he's pretty good. He's got a good system in place, obviously. He's got a good culture. And he's taking a guy in Hendon Hooker who none of us had ever heard of when he was at Virginia Tech. That's how pedestrian he was, and turned him into a star. Let's get Jamie in here next. Jamie, you're on the drive. It's Fan Run Radio. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Russ.
Hey, what's up, Jamie?
Yeah, not playing any defense and scoring 70 almost cost us Saturday. So, yeah, I get your sarcasm. But, we got to get a little bit better on that side of the ball, and things should take care of themselves. Bear, who was – you said you had some pushback. What quarterback since Casey Clawson would anybody put above Hendon Hooker?
No, they said they thought that Hooker was the best quarterback since Manning.
Got you. Oh. Okay, well.
Yeah?
Let's see. Yeah.
Let's see.
I don't see. No, I tell you what, man. I'm not going to say over yeah. Casey Clawson yet until Casey, he wins in Gainesville.
Hey, Casey won in the Swamp twice and went to two right. SEC championship games. I mean,
right.
Let's. And Hendon's obviously a better athlete, but we're talking about winning here, right?
No, we're talking about who's a better quarterback. Is what I thought we were talking about.
Yeah, you know, that's fair, Bear. That's fair. But even at that, I don't know. Maybe Casey Clawson.
Well, I'll go ahead and tell you the thing that the difference. Casey Clawson had John Henderson, Albert Haynesworth, Will Overstreet, who was a fourth person on that D line. I mean, he had some unreal defenses holding it down for him. It's just two completely different eras. But I mean, Hendon's definitely etching his name in the. You know, in the history books.
So. It's good to have that conversation for sure. Guys, we're going to have to clean a couple of the things up before it comes back and bites us. The throat slashing and the bird flipping. Some official might look at that and throw the flag at the wrong time against us. That's something we got to get. We got to get that under wraps.
It bit us really, really bad against in baseball season.
Yeah, and if any program or school usually gets singled out for that stuff, it's us. So I saw Mincy do it. I saw Banks hovering over Richardson one time.
Oh, we got so lucky. It wasn't one time. It was at a critical. Just a critical moment in the game.
It's critical.
I mean, if they called that there, they wouldn't have punted.
I think Wright on his touchdown, the backup tailback behind Small when he scored, he did throw slash and gator chomp right in front of an official.
Yeah.
Those are just a few. Like I said, man, we've got a good coach. He's just going to clean up this, you know.
But don't you think he knows that, Jamie? And, like, we talked about this coming out of the Pitt game. It's like, man, we're so lucky. You got to clean things up. And I think it's not the kind of thing that you just snap your finger and everything is 100% better. Like, it's a gradual thing. It's a process. And we looked better against Florida than we did against Pitt. Now we've got an off week, and we all know the stats about Heupel after an off week and everything. You've got three practices this week to – you don't even have to think about LSU, right? You just can – you can self-scout and go to the field and say, all right, here's what we got to work on. This has been a big problem for us. A lot of, obviously, defensive stuff they're going to be focusing on. But, yeah, offense can focus on, hey, man, let's not flip guys' bird. Hey, let's not get a taunting call, things like that. And
I'm being told it wasn't a throat slash, that it was a finger sniff. I'm not sure what that means. But
looked like
old.
A throat slash to me.
It looked like a throat slash to me too. Guys, the Russell at the end of the game when Tennessee had the ball with about 6 minutes to go, it seemed certainly sound football the way that Heupel both appeased both of us on that the way he would kept Florida from being able to substitute by getting up to the line but milking that play clock. And I loved every second of it. How about you?
Yeah, I think that the way he managed that sequence was the right way to go about it. I don't think you kick a field goal on that fourth down. The play they ran, if you go back and look, the play they ran was the exact same play that they ran to Brew McCoy for a touchdown at the end of the first half. And if you watch that play, he was wide open. Like, he might have scored. And I don't know if Hooker just didn't see him or if, you know, Heupel told him to throw to Fant no matter what, but it was an easy throw that would have ended the game. I have no problem with trying to run out the clock. That's what you do there, man. That's what you got to do. We just got to get better at it.
Yeah, it's sound football. You know, it didn't happen to work out that time, but I just, you know, if I'm on the other side of the field, if, you know, being a Florida fan, it'd make me sick watching that clock keep running. So I'm all about it, man. It's sound, it's smart. I'm so glad that he got out of his comfort zone and decided to do it. Turned out that every second we burned, we needed to burn. I was watching, you know, like you said, you've replayed it a couple times. I've replayed it. We took we got a first down with 2 minutes and 59 seconds to go, leaving Florida with one timeout, up 11. And still they were throwing into the end zone on the final play. That's just the Florida-Tennessee series, man. That's crazy. I've got no issues with running the ball. You know, like you said, on that fourth down pass to Fant, I've got no problems running into the line three straight times. Matter of fact, I wouldn't have had a problem. You know, fourth down, you lose, you know, if you don't get the first down, the clock stops anyway with change of possession. So I'm cool with throwing it there. But on plays first through three, I got no problem running it there. It's not high percentage, but at that time of the game, you're burning time. You're just burning. You want to give Florida as little time as you can. And I'm all about that strategery. Guys, the number four receiver for Florida on the final drive of the game, I think it was after the first play, he might have caught a little out route and got out of bounds, leaving 11 seconds. Well, Sunbelt boy called him over to the sideline and spoke to him real quick, and then they threw the next pass to him, and he didn't run an out route. He ran a stick, and Richardson led him to the sideline. It was incomplete, and it burned 5 seconds. And I'm just wondering, I wish I could figure out what he told him there and what happened, because if they get another 8 or 10 yards closer there, that pass that, you know, we intercepted at the 12 might have been in the end zone. Russ, thing, you've seen it a couple times. Do you see that?
Yeah, but that thing was a wounded duck coming out because we got Banks
Byron
came
Young
up.
Got him.
Yeah, Banks and Young.
Hey, Jamie, we got to run, man. We got CG coming on here in a second.
Hey,
but
tell CG I says, hey, y'all hang in there.
All right, man, appreciate you. The drive continues. It's Fan Run Radio. Christopher Gabriel of KFJ Fresno joins us when we continue next here on The Drive. Fan Run Radio, The Drive continues. Russell Bear and Marcus Young cruising along with you on an Overreaction Monday here on The Drive. And we go back to the Big Orange Phillies phone lines where our friend Christopher Gabriel of KFJ Fresno is standing by. CG, what's up?
Well, good afternoon to you, my friend. You know, it's great to talk to you now that I can, not only from pictures, but in person at Calhoun's, tailgating, downtown, the game, everywhere, put a face and a body to you, to Bear, to Marcus, to just about everybody that I have the chance to talk to. Great to chat with you again. And Russ, before we get going here, I would be remiss if I didn't say a big thanks, seriously and sincerely, to you, Bear, and everybody who had a hand in making this weekend so great for myself and my brother-in-law. It was such a pleasure meeting so many wonderful people. And there were a couple of people that I missed because they had work to do. They had family. I didn't get a chance to see Trey Wallace. And I know that Trey was busy and just, you know, wasn't able to swing.
Hold on. Trey's absence is completely unexcused, but please go ahead.
Okay. Well, I don't want to cause trouble with anybody from Mobile, Alabama. But it was so great. And, you know, when I got off the plane in Los Angeles, and anybody in Los Angeles who's a Vols fan that's listening to me and is from there is going to be, you know, ticked off when I say this, but I was reminded the minute I got off the plane in Los Angeles why I love coming to Knoxville, because of all the places, and I got my hand to God, I mean this, with all the places that I have lived in this country that I've been fortunate to travel to in this country, I have never been anywhere where there are nicer people than Knoxville. Mm. Yeah, I'm sure there's jerks. There's jerks everywhere. There's jerks in my hometown of Chicago and back in Fargo and here in Fresno, but I have never been anywhere where I enjoy myself more. So that was a great time, and just really enjoyed the time that I had to spend with you and Bear.
Well, I enjoyed it immensely myself. I know Bear did, and man, the event at Hops and Hollers Friday night was fantastic. And the game was fantastic. The whole trip, Christopher, and I did say on Twitter yesterday, if the Big Orange is able to find a way to go down to Baton Rouge and take down LSU in Tiger Stadium, we might have to set up some sort of a GoFundMe or something to bring you and Kevin back for the Bama game because, I don't know, you guys might be the good luck charm.
Well, I am prepared to follow through with that.
accept the generous donations?
Absolutely. But, yeah, I mean, this. Will you tell me where you want to lead off with this game? Because there's so many different places that we can go here.
Yeah, and we've got maybe 13, 15 minutes here to break it down. So let's start here. What were you and Kevin saying and thinking and feeling when Florida recovers that onside kick with about 50 seconds to go?
I don't know what look was on my face, but Kevin tapped me on the shoulder and said, "You okay?"
And you said, "No."
I was not okay. I was already livid by the way the last 7 minutes and 55 seconds played out because, you know, we led 38-21. The route was on. And, a little bit humorously here, I'm thinking to myself, well, when I was on the Fan Run Radio, I said 45-20, one more score, maybe a turnover, and I'm looking good. But more than that, you and I had discussed on the show Friday, you were saying, I'll take a one-point win. I said, I agree with you, but I think an emphatic statement needs to be made. And that's what the Vols were doing. When they got that onside kick, my very first thought, once I was able to collect myself and pick my teeth up off the third row concrete, was if we lose this game, this program will never, ever live it down.
No.
Ever. Not when you're up 17 and then this thing falls apart like that. But I'll tell you, I want to turn it around a little bit and just give major credit to this team and this coaching staff because I think in those last moments, Russ, what we saw was the influence of Josh Heupel and this coaching staff and the character and the culture that they have brought to this program. Because everybody listening right now and everybody in your studio knows teams in the past wearing orange and white would have lost this game. This team did not. They put immense pressure on Richardson, which should have been there a lot earlier in the game. And then, they, of course, that last pass, you knew it was going to get intercepted. So credit to the Vols. They didn't break. They bent a little bit. They covered it, and they held on. But it never should have been that close.
Never should have been that close, but they get it done. And when they, now that it's over, and I'm having to pinch myself, CG, when I look at these rankings and see Tennessee number 8 in the country. We talked about it Friday out at National Law Rex, just how far this program has come from Jeremy Pruitt and Philip Fulmer being shoved out the door, NCAA cloud of investigation, just dark, dark days in early 2021 to now in the top 10 in the country. And what does it mean for Tennessee's program going forward that they were able to get that win, go into this off week 4-0 and achieving the lofty status that they currently enjoy?
Well, yeah, I think it shows a couple of things, Russ. You're right about, you know, where we were 18 months, two years ago. We were the laughingstock of this country. There were national media members. I'm not going to mention their names because they don't deserve to be mentioned, but we all know who they are, that were just having a field day. And it's curious that none of those individuals, three or four of them, have had a damn word to say, because we've got the right coach. And what it shows with Tennessee football is that this is a strong foundation. This football program has a strong foundation. It had been weakened by some earthquakes. The earthquakes in the names of people like Butch Jones and Jeremy Pruitt. We shook a little bit. The building shook. Some windows broke. A couple of, you know, potted plants fell on the floor. But the frame was still there. We needed to do a cleanup. We needed to do a renovation. We needed to put some new paint up, some new walls. And that's what Josh Heupel and his staff have done. And it showed that Tennessee, and I say this less as a diehard Vols fan and more as an objective observer as football, it shows what kind of a program and destination Tennessee and Knoxville have always been. All the program needed was the person to steer things in the right direction. And I've always felt that things could get turned around fast. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't think it would get turned around this fast. I mean, we have rounded the corner. Let's all collectively agree that this program has rounded the corner. It's not there yet. It's not there, you know, ready to compete for the college football playoff, you know, the Final Four, by any means. If it was a 12-team playoff this year, I'd say there'd be at least a shot of that. But it shows that we have become a destination again. I took a picture of all the recruits that were down there on the field before the game. We saw them up on the outside of the club suites or whatever those things are called, outside of the west side of Neyland. I mean, zooming in on their faces, these kids are having a blast. If you're a recruit and you are down on that field, or you're in the first two or three or four rows of the north end zone, and you are hearing what this place sounds like, and I mean, as many times as we couldn't get them off the field on third and fourth down, the crowd was there for 4 hours. The crowd was there, never letting them down. And that's something that's going to be impressionable to youngsters coming into the program. And so I think what it says, Russ, overall is this program has made great strides under a coach and a coaching staff that had a vision. They had a plan, and they are executing that plan. And we are seeing the results of that plan right now, being 4-0. Fans want to rip on the defense for giving up as many yards and points. You know what? Newsflash. Florida couldn't stop us either. Florida couldn't stop us, and really, we were pounding them in the second half. And had I think Josh Heupel and his staff, Russ, I'm curious what you think about this. I think this was a teachable moment for them. As smart as they are, as great as they are, and I do mean great, as coaches, especially Josh, I think this was a teachable moment because he played the clock a little bit. He played the book, as it were. He played the percentages, as it were, and that's fine. But what got this team to a 38-21 lead, they got away from a little bit. And we've seen pro teams forever have that happen. Next time, I guarantee you, That's not going to happen. He will stick his foot on the throat of whoever he's playing, and that 38-21 lead, whatever it will be, it will not go away.
Yeah, I wonder, and Heupel's so cagey with the media, you know, who knows what he's really thinking, but if I could get a dose of truth serum in his veins and ask him about that, I would be fascinated to learn, you know, what his line of thought is and what he's going to be doing going forward, because we will be seeing similar circumstances again, I believe, this season. Christopher Gabriel with us here. Chris, we've talked a lot about the in-game experience at Neyland, the new additions there, the Uncle Dan's party deck, whatever we're calling it, the Lower West Club seats down there, the wine and cheesers. What was your thoughts on those additions, the you know, the pageantry and everything that went into it that you got to experience firsthand on Saturday?
Well, I think those are great additions. You know, Danny White has been fantastic, and he is, you know, he made a point, and he said it, but we all kind of knew that he was going to do this, because any outstanding athletic director is going to do this, and it's why he's one of the best in the nation at his job. He went around the country, and he looked around, and he's been around the country as it is, but he understood that more stadiums are going to more themed areas. They're taking some seats out to get more themed areas to create that, as you said, an even better in-game experience. And I was sitting in YY6 directly next to the party deck and just looking over at those folks. They were having a blast up there. I mean, they were having a great time. They were engaged. They were into it. I walked back there once during the game and just kind of behind there a little bit. And I mean, it wasn't a wine and cheese crowd up there. Looking at the folks down in the western, you know, the west seats down there, those I would call those the Dodger Stadium seats. They remind me of what they put in behind the plate. Of course, just about every stadium has that now. I guess it's a victory. I mean, if you have the money and you want to have that kind of experience, then why not? I'm just glad they showed up, because I don't know how many times over the years when I would be sitting in my old season tickets up in YY9 and I'd look down at the west side in the lower deck, and there were just empty spots all over the place, except for Alabama and Florida. At least they were there. I think that the next step, it may not be the next step, Russ, but one of the next few steps, and I've said it a lot of times and you've said it as well, has to be renovating, redoing, revamping, and cleaning up the south side exterior. I had one Vols fan come at me saying, son, you must not, I love that, he called me son, you must not understand how football works. All football matters is the inside on the field. Nothing else matters. It's like, well, you know, dude, son, you're wrong. these days,
Dad,
everything matters. When you bring recruits in, you don't want to have to avoid a side of the stadium. Ask Tony V how he said he would have to sneak recruits in because he didn't like the way the outside of the stadium looked. So that's what they need to do. Neyland never looked better. It was deafening as always. And let me just say this. And again, I'm not breaking news to your great audience. For a long time now, this program has been down, and so we've not heard Neyland mentioned in the same sentence or paragraph as Tiger Stadium, the Swamp, Clemson, Autzen Stadium at Oregon. I've been in all those places, and Neyland takes a back seat to no one. It takes a back seat to no other stadium. The different levels in terms of where decibels peak out has to do with how good your team is, how it has to do with who you're playing, and so on. But when you're talking about stadiums at their apex, Neyland is right there. And once again, this stadium, this crowd, this fan base showed the entire world of college football what this place is like. It is an absolute madhouse on the river. And as this program gets better and better, it's going to get crazier and crazier. And it's going to be great to see what it's going to be like in a week and a half, 2 weeks down at another crazy joint, Tiger Stadium, a.k.a. Death Valley.
Yes. Christopher Gabriel, KMJ Fresno with us. Christopher, we got just a minute or two left here. Real quickly, on your way out the door, your thoughts on that trip to LSU and Death Valley, a noon kickoff, 11 a.m. local time. You're going to be like still in your robe drinking your morning coffee when that thing kicks off.
Yeah, the folks down at LSU will still be dealing with a hangover from the entire week. I'll just say this. One of the things that I've been a little bothered by is seeing how many Vols fans are saying, well, at least we've got a chance now. At least we have a shot because it's not a night game. Okay, newsflash. In the last 8 years, not including this year, in the last 8 years, LSU has lost 11 games at home. Folks, they do lose in that stadium. Yes, the crowd isn't as jacked up, but I don't want to hear anything about the Vols going in and being little kittens. The Vols are the better team. The Vols are the better team, and if the Vols take care of business, they will go down there and they will beat LSU. The crowd is not going to beat Tennessee. It'll be if they start turning the ball over and not executing on offense. Otherwise, I don't want to hear us putting anybody else on some pedestal. Forget that. The Tennessee Volunteers will go down there. They'll take care of business. I'm convinced of it.
Great stuff. Christopher Gabriel, we could talk all day, brother. We'll have you on again soon. Great seeing you and your brother-in-law this past weekend, man. I know you had a great time. I'm so glad it came together.
Likewise. Feelings mutual. Go Vols.
Thank you. Christopher Gabriel on the Big Orange Phillies phone lines. Big Orange Phillies in Hall, 6625 Maderville Pike. Check out the menu online at BigOrangePhillies.com. Great spot for a quick lunch. Burgers, beers with fridge after work. Big Orange Phillies in Halls. Tell them Fan Run sent you. Quick timeout. The drive continues. More Fan Run Radio coming up. Fan Run Radio, the drive continues. Christopher Gabriel, KMJ Fresno. Bear, what did you learn?
He had a really good time this weekend.
Oh, Wallace. Standing. Oh, like Wallace is the one who brought the CGP to the table and it doesn't show up at all.
I don't know why you're surprised at all about this.
Well, he said Friday that, if I can't make it Friday, I'll see you Saturday.
That's classic Wallace.
And we didn't hear from him Saturday.
No, I knew you guys wouldn't.
I heard from everybody Saturday. Everybody's trying to come and party with us.
When he said that on Friday.
It's an outrage.
It was on the show because I think I remember looked at either Hickman or Marcus. I was like, they ain't seeing Trey this weekend. I know Wallace, man. Know him like the back of my hand. Knew you guys weren't going to see him.
Did you have fun, Marcus, at the thing Friday?
Yeah, I wish I could have stayed longer. I helped out with overtime, so I got there a bit late, and then I had to leave for work, unfortunately. But
Marcus snuck it in between his two jobs.
Yeah. I did a quick drive by.
All of us were exhausted.
What does Wallace have to do? Track a plane that's going from like Boise to Texas or something?
I don't know. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I can't remember everybody's names, but I had a blast. I had fun talking to everybody that came out.
I got a chance to talk with Megan and Rex for a bit. And
how about Rex and his Bammer girlfriend? That's true love right there.
I really can't say anything. I married one.
Roll damn tide.
We talked about that. DJ Loop was blown away.
I mean, has he ever not been?
I've never seen DJ to that extent.
Definitely going to have to do more of those, I feel like.
Yes. Yes. More. Let's go back to the busy, busy Big Orange Phillies phone lines on this Overreaction Monday and talk to Phil next. Good afternoon, Phil.
What
do you say, Philly?
How you, Baron? Mark's done.
Man, it's amazing, Phil. Like, we're 4-0. We're in the top 10. It feels like old times.
Yeah, it does. It feels good. That's no doubt about it.
You said if we were 4-0, if we had beat Florida, I don't remember exactly what it was. Marcus has a better memory than me when it comes to these things. But you said you'd be satisfied if we beat Florida or something like that. We won these two games against Pitt and Florida.
Well, I'm very satisfied. You got 9-3 at the worst now. I know we'll beat Kentucky and Alabama and Georgia, who knows what happened there. But you got your program in a good situation, even though I was very antsy there at the end. I disagree with our play call, and I would have run the ball outside. I would have been running between the tackles.
Phil, I did want to ask you, because you've said this during the offseason and leading up to these games. You said that if your coach within year two can beat Florida, like, do you feel like you've got the guy? After these last four games?
You like how Marcus remembers everything you say, Phil?
Well, yeah. I mean, so far, so good. We're really ahead of schedule, probably.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. I mean,
we don't have a defense.
When he was up there at that podium and the press conference nobody could go to because of COVID, if somebody told us that year two, he'd have beaten Florida and he'd have Tennessee in the top 10 in September – we'd have been like, that's a home run hire. Like, that's the dude. Like, yeah. Absolutely.
We've he's amassed a bunch of deficiencies, and we're still probably two recruiting classes away from being. I mean, we're in the top 10 now, but if you're going to contend for the playoffs, you got to keep recruiting better.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm not getting into this Alabama Georgia talk. I'm just enjoying this ride, Phil. These yeah. next 2 weeks are going to be so much fun and leading. And CG's right. There is no reason to genuflect before LSU and Tiger Stadium and all that stuff. There's no reason not to expect to win that game.
Well, we've already exercised two curses. Let's just get rid of three. But,
hey, we settle all family business this year, Phil.
The last time we were down there was the 12 o'clock, the Chinese fire drill game. When between Dooley and who is it? Coach Chuck Smith sent 18 people out on the field.
Dooley's dozen.
Yeah.
That was a noon kickoff.
I'm almost positive.
Yep. Now, somebody sent me and Bear a DM today, and it's an interesting thought because everybody talks about, the night games and everything, and they've won something like 17 of these nooners in a row dating back to 1997.
Nah, Cody dug in deeper to it. I listened to him on Talk Sports. Talk Sports were talking about it. They've played 8 times.
And they've won them all?
Yeah. I mean, they've won them all, but I think Cody said it was 8 times since whenever.
But they haven't – when you play traditionally – and this is why this year is weird and the announcement today is strange – is because when they're playing a home game at noon, it's usually a game they're expected to win because TV doesn't – you know, if they're playing Alabama or Auburn or somebody, big game like that, that's generally a night game at Tiger Stadium or a 3:30 game. So their noon home games are against Louisiana Monroe or Vandy or something like that. And it's just strange that this has worked out the way it's done. But that's just another serendipitous twist for the Big Orange. I mean, we got lucky today.
Yeah, I'd rather play them at noon at any time.
Absolutely.
Those people are going to be hung over.
If they're even there,
their stomachs are going to be hurting from all the corn dogs they ate the night before.
I do remember in 1989, which this team is very similar to that team, all offense, no defense.
I remember that one.
Carl Pickens run a kickoff back for a touchdown and beat them down there.
I think the only thing I think Brian Kelly's a step above Jerry DiNardo in coaching ability.
He might be, but he's in a different conference now than he was at Notre Dame.
Yeah, he is.
And I expect Tennessee to beat LSU.
Wow.
Wow. You heard it first from the mayor of South Knoxville.
We got a better quarterback than LSU does. He's not a bad quarterback, but I don't think he's going to throw for 400-something yards, almost like Florida's quarterback did.
There's only one team I feel like has an – obviously a better quarterback than we do, and just because he's got the hardware from last year, and that's the young kid at Alabama. I'm not taking anybody else over Hooker. Yeah.
I've just tried to adjust to this new relentlessly positive Phil that we've encountered this afternoon. I'm kind of liking it, to be quite honest.
Well, it's great because that would have been the biggest choke job ever if that would have happened there at the end. But we didn't choke, and we won. That's the main thing.
This phone call this weekend and this – town would have taken on an entirely different tenor if Tennessee had blown that away.
Well, Tennessee's fans deserve championship type football, and I agree with somebody earlier in the show. I think Hendon Hooker is the best quarterback since Peyton Manning. I mean, Casey Clawson was a good college quarterback, but he had a lot more stuff on offense and defense than what Hendon Hooker's got.
He had two borderline Hall of Fame defensive tackles.
Well, yeah, look at what he had to throw to.
Yeah. And he had an incredible defense. He was – who were his running men? I mean, he had Jabari Davis, Travis Stevens.
Yeah, so they're loaded. And the offensive line was even better.
Do you imagine having the J-train in this offense?
Hey, man, Peyton had just as good, if not better, talent and couldn't get it done against Florida. Casey won down there twice. Y'all put some respect on his name.
I respect
him. The Iceman you're talking about.
I'm just saying, I think Hendo's – Hernan's a better quarterback than Clawson. Clawson would probably tell you that.
He had the best performance of winning over Florida. He sure beat Florida.
He had the best performance of Tennessee, any Tennessee player has ever had against Florida, period.
Exactly. All right, we agree on something. See
you. Thank you, Phil. Let's work in Trey if we can before top of the hour here. Trey, good afternoon. You're on the Big Orange Phillies phone line.
Fellas.
Trey.
That was the weekend.
That
right
was it
there.
Right there, man.
I got to say, right, it is so hard to transition from voluntary reaction to going back on the drive.
Yeah.
Mondays, it's a hard transition to make. I have to self-filter.
Keep
I
it
really
clean.
Have to think about it.
Women and children
I
listening.
Am, I haven't screwed up yet, but just one day if it happens, please forgive me. Before I go into all the positive, because there's a lot, can I get an I told you so on the defense after Ball State?
Hmm.
Do I get it yet, or do you need to see more?
I don't want to give it to you because I don't want to, but I guess yes.
I told you so.
All right, Trey tried to warn us. The defense is garbage. Everybody piled on him.
I don't agree with that. I don't think he deserved an "I told you so."
Why?
He's lucky. All right, you're lucky we're letting you celebrate with us, Trey. You've been incredibly negative all season, and you're going to pop up here and "I told you so." She told us her defense was garbage.
Fair. That's all.
You're not taking into account the what they decided to do strategically against Florida.
Strategically, what the only strategy going on was, you know, Banks probably bet the Florida cover.
Our strategy of letting Anthony Richardson tire himself out by running all over the field and completing a billion passes, it worked.
Yeah.
He was exhausted by the end.
Rotator cuff out there, Bear, after throwing for 500.
Well, no, they weren't going to let Florida come in here and rush for 300 plus yards, which is usually their MO in all these games where they beat the hell out of us.
You're right, Bear. Usually when you take away a strength, the other team kind of sucks at the other thing. In this case, he threw for how many touchdowns after not throwing for a single one all season? I mean, I understand. I've heard all kinds of arguments and people trying to justify it. I don't blame Banks for everything, but our defense, like our line is good, but after that, you know, it goes, our defensive line is good. Our linebackers are okay. Our secondary is trash.
Trey, I feel like you're calling the cops on our party here, buddy. You're calling the cops on my party.
Let me switch to positive because I know you guys are up against it. One thing I will say I love about this team and I love about Heupel is I feel like when a team steps on the field with us, before the game even starts, they have to play it on our terms. Like Billy Napier going for it on like their own, you know, 25. That's playing on our terms.
He was coaching scared
about this coach.
That's a great.
I mean, that's a,
yeah. It's Spurrier-esque. We decide. It's Bruce Pearl. We're going to tell you how this game's going to play. You do what you want, but we're doing.
We are the person who knocks.
Hour number three. Thank you, Trey. We got to run. The drive continues. More Fan Run Radio coming up.